Okay. Right. Welcome to Step Parent World. I'm your host, Martin Locke, and thank you for listening to my podcast today. Today's podcast, it is going to be about parenting styles and the difference in parenting styles between a biological parent and a step parent. So just to give you a little bit of a background, I was a stepdad for over 20 years, and it was probably the most challenging thing I've ever done. From a step-parent point of view, I know quite a lot through my own experiences of what a roller coaster ride it can be. But I'm trying to get different views from biological parents as well, because it's important that, you know, they get heard within a step family, because they're part of the step family. I have a guest on today who is a biological mum, and we're going to discuss with Sarah about different parenting styles of how she sees it. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me, Martin.
Thank you very much for coming on. So what I'd like you to do, sir, is just give us a little bit of your background, what you do, your family, if you're happy to discuss your family, just anything you think you want the viewers to know.
Sure thing. So I live in Sydney, and I'm a mum of four children, and they are also the children of my husband. I have a 20-year-old girl, a 17-year-old boy, and a 14-year-old girl and an 8-year-old girl. So we've got about a 12-year age gap between number one and number four, which presents its own challenges because my eldest tells me how I should parent my youngest, which is quite funny. Less funny at the time, but a little bit funny afterwards. And she's sure that I was far stricter with her than I am with number four. So... anyway,
that's fascinating, actually. Yeah, that's interesting to hear.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, and you know, and I'm sure that you appreciate that as well. Over 20 years, your parenting actually evolves.
Yeah,
and it does change over time. So I'm pretty active on social media with, and I think that's how you and I met, Martin, which is, I think, yes, we've known each other for maybe a couple of years now on on social media, which has been really nice. And so that's where I post most of my information, and it's mostly about parenting, communication, and lots of sort of practical tips. My background is psychology. That's what I studied at uni. And then I have volunteered as a crisis counsellor with Lifeline here in Australia. And I've also volunteered when we lived overseas, working with children with additional needs in schools. And then since coming back to Sydney, I have started to write for a lifestyle boutique magazine called Sydney Observer, and I write for them on wellness, well-being, parenting, positive psychology, and that sort of thing. So that's my main gig. And all my articles can be found on my Instagram page as well. And then I also mentor and tutor students privately. So I work with high school students aged between about 14 and 18, and I give them academic support as well as mentoring, life coaching, practical tips, how to manage anxiety, those sort of things.
Wow. Busy lady.
Yeah, it's all good. Try and reserve time for myself in the day as well. I love to walk. I run a book club, so I really love to read. I encourage all my students to read for pleasure. Wonderful. Yeah, so that's.
I'd like to take you back to the ages of your children. I didn't actually have this on my list of questions for you, but I'd like to ask you. Mm. It's a great question your eldest asked you about, were they, was it your daughter that's the older one?
Yes.
So she asked you, or said to you, the way you parented me was a bit different to the way you parent the youngest. Mm. What was your answer?
I tried not to be too defensive at the outset. But I am very aware that my parenting, I think, as my confidence has improved as a parent, mm-hmm. and I'm a less anxious parent of my number three and four than I was of number one and two. I was quite an anxious parent, and I worried terribly for their safety. I mean, we also had some mitigating or mediating circumstances. We lived overseas where English wasn't spoken readily. We lived in Tokyo, which is where I had number one. So my anxiety levels and no support, no family. My husband worked, you know, very hard. So it was my circumstance coupled with my first baby. But it did make me to be quite anxious. I had trouble, like literally even just putting her down. But by the time number four came along, I think my confidence as a parent had grown considerably. I suppose I just felt as though I knew what I was doing a little bit better.
Yeah.
And my circumstances improved as well. So by then we were actually living in Singapore where English is spoken and I had a far greater support network.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. I love when children ask questions, especially when they're different age. You know, there's a few years between them. I get fascinated by it because it makes you stop and think as a parent and think, have I parented different? And I think you're right. And I think parents, when I was researching this particular podcast, there's a lot about you can be this parent and that parent, you can be this, you can be that, you can be uninvolved, you can be this, you can be an authority, all these different ones. And I looked at them and I said, do you know what? I think I've been all of them at some point. I don't think I'm a particular parent, because I think when you go into a step family, if you haven't got children, you start off with nothing. So you're probably uninvolved. But as time goes on, you probably change. So you might go through all of the different parenting styles before the child moves on with their own life. So I can't label myself as a particular parent. If I'm honest. So it's fascinating. Yeah, it's really great to hear. So the first question I've got for you, Sarah, you might have almost answered a little bit of it just now, but how would you describe your parenting style?
Well, you know, as you've just mentioned, there are the four styles, which basically the literature talks about, which is authoritative, which is the preferred style. And then there's authoritarian, which is considered to be sort of a bit more, you know, like a military academy. Then there's permissive or permissive indulgent, which is it's still very loving, but there's very little demands or boundaries that are set on the child. And then there's basically uninvolved or neglectful. So I would like to think that I was an authoritative parent, which is highly responsive but also highly demanding. So. And the literature supports that as the most favorable parenting style, that's how you increase a child's self-esteem, that's how you grow their confidence, and that also it's not you're not running a dictatorship. So that you're wanting to encourage their involvement, you're wanting to encourage later on, definitely, as you well know, with grown-up children, their independence and their autonomy, but you can't do that by being a dictator, nor can you do it by being uninvolved or too indulgent and permissive, because life does have rules and regulations, and to some extent we all need to follow them.
So do you think that style was when you first became a parent, and do you think that style is still what you use today?
I think that, rather like you, there have been times when I would definitely have been more permissive or indulgent than perhaps was healthy. I've definitely never been uninvolved or neglectful. Authoritarian, I don't think so. I definitely don't run a boot camp here. But I would probably err a little bit more on the too soft side. So, you know, and it's a tricky thing with your partner as well, because I think that often in a relationship, one will tend to be more the setting of the rules, and the other one might be sort of more like the fun parent. And
that good cop, bad cop.
Exactly. And that can just be such a tricky one to navigate and negotiate. But, you know, a lot of this stuff I really want to normalize, that none of it is, well, of course there's bad parenting, which is abusive and neglectful. But that's at a far end of the spectrum. So a lot of what we're doing, it is very normal within families. That there will be, you know, most of us will be trying to essentially go for consistent. I mean, this is the literature basically says you're looking to be a consistent and a predictable parent. So you're making high demands, but you're also highly responsive.
Yeah.
But definitely sometimes, you know, life gets in the way and perhaps, you know, busy parents just think, oh, I'm just going to go ahead and do it because it's too much of a hassle to get them to do it. Well, in the long run, that doesn't serve us or the children terribly well. But of course, let's be real, everyone's going to take shortcuts sometimes.
Yeah. It's interesting because obviously being a biological parent and you have your partner with you, you both have an equal, you know, way of disciplining and enforcing or doing the consequences. It's completely different in step family because the uninvolved parent can often be a step parent that gets pushed into that because I've made mistakes before where you go into a family and you want to be setting the rules and the consequences and you want to make sure the children behave themselves and they're disciplined, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That makes you be a little bit more out there, a little bit more involved. Mm. But if that starts backfiring, you've got to step back because the idea being is the biological parent should discipline the children. You can agree the rules as a step parent and agree the consequences as a step parent, but you can't enforce the rules. That's down to the biological parents. Yes. It almost pushes you towards being uninvolved without even knowing it. Yes. And you stand there some days and you're like, hang on a minute, so-and-so did this. I've been disrespected. Is that okay? Is that okay for me to be like, but you can't do anything about it. So you almost become this uninvolved parent purely because you're a step parent. Biological, completely different, purely because you've got two equal parents. So it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And this is why I think I've drifted into all of them. I really do. But sometimes you don't realize it until you stop one day and go, I think I'm not very involved here.
Yes.
But that's actually okay. That's not a problem for me.
Yes.
But you sort of, you drift between different styles.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that, it, you know, as I'm listening to you say this, you know, where the biological parent may be the one who's setting the rules as well as enforcing the rules, and then the step-parent may not really have a place. I think that, and I think that you and I have touched on this earlier, was where your values and principles lie. That, you know, because even as biological parents, where you know, it's supposed to be equal and shared. Often it's not. I think there'll often be one parent who does sort of a lot of the heavy lifting, and the other parent, perhaps, you know, one parent works part time and the other one works full time, or things like that. Or it's also certain things that you may have inherited from your family of origin.
Yeah, good point.
You know, that you're perhaps trying to be more like, or trying to be a lot less like. Which will drive you, say, you know, perhaps to be the more uninvolved or something like that. But also, as for my husband and I, as our parenting has evolved, we've had to have many conversations where I've asked for, you know, my husband's support to come in really alongside me, but not kind of take over or say, well, you're doing it wrong, or here, I'm going to step in and fix it. But the two of us are very much in agreement that these are the rules of the house, and this is the way the children are going to move forward, whether it comes from mum or dad.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering if that, but this requires a huge amount of talking and agreement from the couples.
Yeah. Communication.
Mm. Yeah. So, I mean, has that sort of been also part of your experience? Where you can be very much aligned with your partner, and then the two of you can move the family forward in that direction?
Yes and no. I think it depends. A lot of it is to do with who's the actual stay-at-home parent as well. So if you've got, I was a stay-at-home stepdad for a year with my little boy, who's my biological son, which I loved. It's one of the best years of my life. It's absolutely fantastic. When you're a stay-at-home parent, or stay-at-home step-parents, completely different, because if you've got a stepmom or stepdad that is, it's got three young children to look after, mm-hmm. and their partner's at work for 10 hours a day, mm-hmm. you have to have some sort of authority. Mm-hmm. You have to.
Yes.
But that's where it comes in. You agree it with your partner and say, look, you know, I need you to support me. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what your parenting styles are.
Yes.
If you're not in the house, I need the children to know that mm-hmm. I am the authority figure, mm-hmm. purely because when you're away, the house is going to be chaotic. It's going to be chaos. It's going to drive me crazy.
Yeah.
You're going to come home. You're going to be tired. So that's where the biological parent has got to say to the children, look, mum's here, or dad's, mum and dad are here.
They're in charge.
Yeah, they're in charge. Yes. Until I come back home and you listen to what they say, it makes a more stable house. So for me, it's a really good question. Again, it's kind of, because I was involved for 20 years as a stepdad, it changed so much with the children's ages. Mm-hmm. So it's never the same.
Yeah.
And then different job changes. So you might work half a day or a whole day, or like I say, that whole year with my biological son.
Mm-hmm.
It changes so much. It's like a roller coaster.
Yeah.
If you've got a partner that's going out set hours every single day and it stays the same every single day, you get a pattern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's no real routine there, it makes it a lot more difficult. But mm-hmm. I think the point you made is crucial, the communication mm-hmm. between you and your partner.
Yeah.
Of how you're going to deal with the children when your partner's not actually there, whether you're biological or step-parent. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, what can also happen, and it really is quite common in families, is triangulation. So, you know, say if one parent has trouble communicating directly with one child, they will recruit, either another child or the other parent in order to, communicate with, say, that child on their behalf.
Yeah.
Now, this is a very common occurrence, is triangulation. So, but the focus, as you and I have been discussing, has to always come back to the primary couple, which is the husband and wife, or the partners, and that they're in agreement, and that they present a unified front, and that the rules, the values, the principles that are agreed on need to be followed by the children.
Yeah.
Once that's, I mean, that another thing is, and this is another critical point, I think, is who makes the rules or who sets the rules, and then who maintains the rules. Now, that is a really, really tricky one as well, because being the enforcer, it's an incredibly hard position to be in. And, you know, that parent can also get quite burned out and resentful.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Been there.
Yeah. It's brutal.
Yeah, it is.
It's absolutely brutal. But it happens in biological families as well. Or in, say, single families of single parents is...
Yeah, it's even harder.
...is another really, really tricky dynamic. So I think that with whether it's biological is definitely complicated and hard, but once you've added the step element, I think it's more complex, and then it's kind of layered.
Yeah.
You've got some of this other, and it's also like this other story. Oh, but we didn't used to do it like that. Oh, but that's not what so-and-so says.
Yeah, I agree.
You've got this other narrative that's going on, as well as the what is the relationship like with the other parent, I would imagine, you know, because that can be extremely toxic and negative, or it could be a very, very positive interaction. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think as well, you know, there's not just mum and dad. There's ex-partners to consider.
Yep.
There's other family members to consider, biological stepchildren to consider. So, again, sometimes you might have a disagreement, but different parenting styles purely because your partner might well be influenced by their ex-partner, who is the mum or the dad of the children. They might not agree with the step-parents' parenting style, and like, oh no, they're too strict, or they shouldn't be involved, they shouldn't do this, they shouldn't do that. Then it kind of makes the biological partner step up and go, well, hang on a minute, do you have rules at your house that are different to ours? Well, you want to kind of align the rules if you can, but if you can't, then that's just how life goes. So you can even have like an ex-partner that's caused me a lot of grief,
yeah,
that's questioning your parenting style as well.
Yeah.
And as a new step parent, you do question yourself. I've had it. I had it with in my marriage that, you know, you had an ex would question you, and you question yourself after a while. If you're new to something, you got to think, hang on a minute, is he right or is she right? Am I doing the right thing? And as time goes on, you start getting more confident. And you're like, yes, I am doing the right thing here. As long as my partner's happy with what I'm doing, we're okay.
Exactly.
So outside influences can change your parenting style as well, because you question yourself.
Oh, very much so. Very much so. And that's actually quite a burden on the relationship.
Yeah, definitely.
On that primary relationship, you've got that sort of negativity and sort of, you know, sowing seeds of doubt when it's already challenging.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think as strong as you can make the couple's relationship, it's that's basically the bedrock of, you know, of parenting.
Yeah. Okie dokie. We might have answered question two, but I put, how do you think being a step parent or a biological parent affects styles of parenting? But I think we more or less covered that just now. Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add?
You know, I think that step and biological, I think there's a lot of similarities and there's a lot of overlap. I think there's definitely differences, but if you can just establish that rock solid communication and trust, whether it's, I think that that's just basically the best way forward, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right. May I ask you, don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but may I ask you which rules you use in your house and how you enforce them? What I mean by how you enforce them, do you enforce them together with your partner, or is there certain rules you enforce individually, or?
Yeah.
How does it work in your house?
I have sort of been much more the hands-on parent, and I think I parent quite intuitively. So it has come quite easily and naturally to me, and it's being a mum is really the thing that I most wanted in life. So it's something that I really have poured a huge amount of energy into. But it's so a lot of the rules I have established, but then I think rather like you, as the children have basic rules, you know, clearing the table, putting your dishes in the sink, and then all the kids have chores, unstacking the dishwasher, hanging up washing, vacuuming, whatever the case may be, walking the dog, everyone's got a job. But as the children have got older, I've very much more needed my husband's support to, and I guess having four as well, you just can't keep tabs on everybody. It's it's a big and busy family, and it is lovely, but and it's also, you know, I do laugh at the children. I think you're so lucky you've got each other, because you can all just fly under the radar and I don't know who's done what.
Yeah, who's got whose back.
Exactly. And they're all pointing the finger. My number two son actually blamed my number three child whilst she was still in the womb for having done something. So, because we found out the genders of all the babies, or the sex of all the babies, when I was pregnant. And so Phoenix, my number two son, he goes, "Oh no, but Sahara did that, mummy." And I said, "But Phoenix, seriously, she's still inside my tummy." So, you know, it's murky. So, you know, I do want to say that it's not ideal. You know, in a biological family, it is messy, it's chaotic, whether you have one child, two or more, it is still pretty messy and chaotic. And I think parents we're very much on the hop a lot of the time. But I would tend to be the rule maker and the enforcer.
Okay. It's like sometimes having to be a detective, isn't it? You know, when you've got more than one child, it's like, right, who did what? And they're saying two different things, like, okay. I used to love it. I used to really not enjoy it, but because I had two stepdaughters, you kind of start knowing them and getting to learn their personalities. And, you know, if one did something wrong, the other one would be super nice, So they'd be really lovely and come make a cup of tea, I'll do this. And then the other one would be in trouble the following day. And the other one would be really, really nice. It's fascinating. So I love it.
Funny.
I love
so
it.
So funny.
Do you think two different parenting styles work effectively within the step family or a family, so including a biological one? So do you think you can have, say, if you was, you know, the authority figure, but your partner was a little bit more uninvolved for whatever reason, do you think it can work, or do you think you've got to be parenting the same style together?
I tend to look at things very much on a spectrum. So I would tend not to see things terribly, say either black or white. So I would expect that, being an authoritative parent, there is still a range with even within that one style. But the short answer would be, I think if your partner was markedly different from you, I think it would be a source of great conflict.
Yeah.
And it's hard, Yaka, to try and get them over the line to see your point of view, but also that you might also be open to their point of view. So, I think as parents and couples, we've got to be open, we've got to be curious, we've got to be flexible, and we do very much have to adapt. I mean, there have been times when my husband said, oh, let's just fly by the seat of our pants, where, I think with small babies, everything was according to a schedule, and, the bags were always packed and nothing was ever forgotten. And I found it very hard to be spontaneous. Because I was afraid of things going wrong, and then they've missed their sleep, and then it's diabolical and all that sort of thing. But my partner Rob, he has helped me to worry less, I suppose. And I guess as the children have got easier, and this is, I think that this is the important part that both you and I recognize, is that our parenting has evolved. So you sort of have to trust the process quite a bit as well. It's you're right there in the trenches. But trust the process. If you've got a loving and supportive partner, you're going to get there. You're going to get
time,
there.
Time and patience. Yeah.
Yeah, and but it is a lot of nonstop talking and negotiating with your partner. If you're you've got a very firm idea on something to try and help get your partner over the line, for instance, I wanted our children to have jobs whilst they were still in high school, because I did. I started working at 15, but my husband, he didn't have his first job until he was in first year uni. So he said, oh, no, just let them get through and they can worry about earning money later on. But that didn't sit well with me at all. We've talked long and hard about it, and our kids have both, the older two have both, actually even the young, even number three, she's very enterprising. She sold a lot of bookmarks and made a lot of money. She was awesome. What's interesting is she can actually see, so her older siblings had jobs in high school, but she can see the freedom and the independence and the autonomy that having their own money has afforded them. Oh, this is not that bad of a chore. You can waste time at home or look at your phone or your screen watching YouTube, or you can actually go out there and earn a few dollars and knock yourself out as the parcels are coming to your front door.
I'm a really big believer in children working. It doesn't matter even if it's like half an hour a day or something where they can earn their own money, so they know that money doesn't grow on trees. It, you get earned. And when they get in the outside world, they're used then to earning the money and not expecting it just to come to them, that mum or dad are just going to give them the money or buy them a car, or they're actually going to earn it. I love it. I think it's absolutely fantastic. So well done. Well done to your
thank you.
Your daughter. I think that's great.
And these are life skills. That's the other thing that we're wanting to do with our, as you well know, with your older children, is you're wanting to prepare them for life. Well, preparing them for life is getting a job and being answerable to somebody else and accountable to somebody else, other than mum and dad and their teachers.
Yeah.
So
it's a great point. It's a great point. Do you think step parents will be generally stricter in their parenting roles? If so, and if you do, why? Why would it be stricter?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I did think a lot about that one, and I actually wondered if step parents might be more permissive than the biological parents, because you can always be accused at the end of the day, yeah, well, you're not my dad.
Yeah. Well,
and it is just such a fine line to tread, I think, as a step parent, when, you know, an obstreperous teenager shooting their mouths off, which they all do, and saying hurtful and unkind things, which they don't mean, but nevertheless they often come out, that I think it could possibly make a step parent tend to be a little softer. And when you asked that question, which I think is a really, really important question, then I was wondering, what's the impact on the biological parent, on the biological children? Because that's a very tricky one to manage within the home. And I've actually got a good friend who this was the case in point for him when his mum remarried. There was basically a different set of rules for the other children, and the expectations were far higher and far harder on him as her biological son. And it's had long-lasting ramifications on him.
Yeah.
So how did it bear out for you?
I think in the first time I was a stepdad, I think I don't think I was strict to start with, but I think as time went on, I kind of fell into that role, because when you're a step parent, it's very, very difficult to know what your role actually is. Mm. You have to establish it even before you live together.
Mm.
You know, if I could do it again, I'd sit down with my partner and say, what do you want me to do as a biological mum?
Yep.
And they're your children.
Mm.
What role do you want me to play? What do you need me to do?
Mm.
And I didn't do that. So I went straight in there, right, let's have these rules. And I connected with my stepchildren very quickly.
Oh.
And to put the rules in place weren't too difficult to start with, but as they got older, it got more difficult. Mm. So I think I was stricter, yeah, if I'm honest, but I think it's easier for a step-parent to be stricter because you don't have that blood bond, right, with the children. Whereas a biological parent, not a biological parent's going to be softer, but you have more, I think, more connection and more emotion purely because they're actually your children.
Right.
It's easier for an outsider to come in and go, no, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to do this. It's easier.
Okay.
So I think I've constricted quite easily.
Interesting.
But as the time goes on, you've got to see what effect it has on your your partner.
Mm.
Is your partner actually happy with what you're doing? This is where I tripped up, because my partner got to the point not very happy what I was doing. So I should have had that discussion before I even moved into the home, before we even settled down together. Then you know where you are. You know where your boundaries are. It's so easy to go in with these huge, what you said earlier on, expectations of I'm going to be loved, I'm going to be liked, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it doesn't always work like that.
Mm.
So my second relationship is a little bit different. So we met quite early, and again, I was quite strict quite early. Again, made the same mistake. This is what I said to you earlier on. I make so many mistakes, and this is how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
But this is what I was saying to you earlier on, that now I've backed off.
Mm-hmm.
So I've actually gone from being pretty strict, and it was a reason for it. You know, I love my partner very much, and I wanted to protect her and make sure she was okay. And now I've become almost an uninvolved step-parent. Married, we're just partners, so I don't really have any say in anything whatsoever other than general day-to-day house rules. You know, the two children have their mum, they have their dad that they see. I don't need to be a parent.
Yeah.
So that was a learning curve for me.
Yeah.
Don't go in strict.
Yeah.
Take my advice. Don't go in strict. Yeah. Go in as a friend. Go in as someone who's going to support your partner.
Yeah.
But the most, if anyone asks me, the biggest tip as a step parent, if I get a client say, what do I do? The biggest tip I would give is talk to your partner even before you move in. Do not move into a house until you know what your role is. If you don't know what your role is, don't live together yet.
Yep.
Get it established before you move in, so everyone knows where they are.
Yeah.
Biggest tip I can give.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, it's funny because you're articulating it so nicely, but also as biological parents, that is a conversation that we also have to have. You know, there's been many times when my husband and I have discussed, you know, you do more, you do less. Yeah, but why, you know, I'm kind of, you know, often quite over-involved. And, you know, he helps me to be less involved. And then as I pull out, there's also space for him to step in more. So, you know, we're still navigating and negotiating that. And often, you know, the other thing too is I really like to encourage people, our children tell us. Especially as they get older and they're keen to separate from us, you know, say from the age of 14 to 16, it's pretty, pretty brutal as they naturally, you know, they naturally need to be independent and their own young people, and they need their privacy and space from parents. They will be very explicit and categorical, asking from us what they do and don't need. And I think as parents, and this would be another thing with authoritative parenting, where you do listen, you very much involve your children in the process. So it's not my way or the highway. It's not dictating terms and conditions. It's you definitely are setting parameters and boundaries where you're looking to keep them safe and respectful, and it's a loving, warm home, to the best of all of our abilities. But you are very much listening to the children. And we'll often, we'll hold a family meeting. And even our youngest, if she's feeling she's a bit overlooked, she writes everybody a note and she says, I want to hold a family meeting, please. I've got things to say.
So, brilliant. You know, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful tool. And the other thing that I write about a fair amount, or I have commented about on my Instagram page, is you know, feel free to text your children. once they have phones and they get a little bit older, they're living on these devices. Go for it. You know, join the program. I'll regularly, my husband and I love my phone and I love technology, and I will text our own children in the house. That's what they're doing all the time. So I think don't try and be so different.
Yeah.
You know, and also if it can take quite a lot of heat, if there's been some conflict and argument, doing things by text. I mean, obviously, you know, body language and tone is lost, so it can be quite dangerous. But there is also opportunities for just a clear message to be sent without all the heat and the emotion in it.
Yeah.
So
I think children are actually very good educators for parents. And I think some parents don't listen to their children. I'm not saying you have to do everything your children say, but if you actually listen to what they're saying, even if they're not saying it very clearly, they're trying to get to a point. And like you said, I think it's your youngest want to have a family meeting. Mm. Children have values as well. Mm. So it's finding that balance between the values of your children and the values of your parents. So family meetings are fantastic, as long as they're quite productive.
Yeah.
So everyone gets heard. Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone gets heard and everyone gets a say. And, you know, I don't know. It's a lot of talking, but
communication.
Yeah.
Okay. My last question for you: what advice would you give to any parent that is actually struggling? So someone's actually, you know, going through quite a torrid time with conflict that's caused by different parenting styles. What advice would you give to them?
I think you sort of have to go back a little bit and think about like what some of this stuff is hanging on. Where are your principles? Where are your values? This person, they may have come to that place via a lot of thinking, or they may have fallen into that place. Find out why have you got such a hard or such a soft position on that? I think unless you find out, unless you keep having those hard conversations, it will be very hard to get to the bottom of it. I mean, I would definitely encourage counselling, family or couples counselling. I think is extremely helpful just to help a lot with the communication. But the other really great resource and tool that parents can use is the Gottman Institute, which is Do you know them?
Yeah, really, really great website. Fantastic website.
So good. It's so good. It's so accessible. It's so relatable. So I think that, you know, they talk about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which is some of the things that really cause tremendous damage to relationships, say stonewalling, you know, cutting your partner out, withdrawing, refusing to communicate, that sort of thing, criticism. Non-stop criticism is very destructive in a relationship. So I think if you can find a way to get back to those good, solid communication, I mean, many couples have a demand withdraw style of communicating where one is just always at the heels of the other and the other one is just retreat, retreat, retreat. And as the space grows larger, the patterns just continue to be repeated. So I would say go for couples or family counselling. Definitely the Gottman Institute is a very powerful resource. The other one is, I mean, even simple things when conflict is becoming difficult or you're noticing a bit of distance with your partner, is there's another great little tool by Gary Chapman, and it's called the Five Love Languages. Because do you know that one as well?
Yeah, I know about love languages. Yeah.
It's not everything. It's not all communication that's available. But you know, quite often, couples are talking quite different love languages. I really deeply like to hear things. For me, people saying well done or my husband saying, you know, you've done a great job, it's been a really hard day or something, it absolutely warms my heart. But for my husband, he doesn't really need to hear words that much. He absolutely does that resonate with you?
My partner often says, oh, do you think this, do you feel that? And I'm like, yeah. Us fellas are different. Us guys are so, so different. I have to watch what I say here. Yeah. But I'm a very big believer in males and females seeing things in different perspectives. And I think, again, this goes back to parenting, step-parenting, biological parenting. Mums need things that dads don't need. Dad needs things that mums don't need. And if you don't communicate between you both of your needs, it's where the issues start. Mm. And one of the exercises I do with my clients is write down your top 10 values and do it together.
Yep.
Once you've both completed, swap over. Mm. See if any of your values actually mirror. Mm. And if they mirror, that's probably where your issue is. You don't realise how important things are to your partner. How often do you sit down with your partner and say, what's your issue today? What's your problem? How can I help you? Yeah. What do I need to do to make things easier for you or better for you? Mm. We don't do it enough. Yeah. We all do it at the start of our relationships when everything's in the honeymoon period. Mm. But then it kind of phases away and that's where the problems start.
Yeah.
Communication is key in every single relationship. Mm. Let people know how you feel. Let people know what you need. Mm. There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. And often when people have issues and come to me with their issues, probably one of the first questions I say is, have you spoken to your partner about this? No. What would change if you did? Well, they'd obviously know how I felt. Okay, but then what else? Well, they might better do something to help you not feel like that anymore. I never thought about that. We get cocooned in our own thoughts and our own feelings, and we've got to come out of the cocoons and start talking to each other, start communicating. And us fellas are the worst. We are the worst ones at it. Not me. I'm actually completely fine. I'll speak about anything and everything.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys out there that don't want to talk. They find it hard to talk, and it's a different subject, really. But does it go back to when your dad was saying "man up," and you know, you don't want to be a girl, or you know, you don't want to do this. Does it go back that far?
Yeah.
quite potentially, yeah. quite possibly. Yeah. But that's a whole different podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, it's all very important, toxic masculinity. But I mean, I would definitely be going back to that. I would definitely be going. I think that, I mean, sometimes if you know, my husband and I, we've got stuff on, or I've had a really tough day, or he's got something on, he and I will have it as an absolute priority to catch up with each other.
Yeah.
And if the kids are coming at us, especially the younger ones, we'll say, look, mummy and daddy are talking. We need a few minutes, please. And it just has to get pushed back. And you know, the kids have to get pushed back, because if you're not in that space, and of course it's not always ideal. There's, you know, there's lots that, you know, the wheels are falling off left, right and center. But I think if there's ways that the couple can sort of keep time aside for themselves, do something each week, even just relatively simple, where you, like my husband and I, we try and walk together on a Saturday and a Sunday, where we just go on our own and we go grab a coffee, we sit in a park and we just have a proper catch up. And you know, we really value and cherish that time. And the kids just have to, I mean, of course it's very difficult when your children are small. That's just, it's hard. You're really, really deep in the trenches there. But wherever you can is keeping that open communication with your partner. And
yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And I think as well.
Yeah, no, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I've done a couple of recent podcasts. I had a guest on a few days ago when we were talking about self-care. Mm. But it's a really good point. Now it's got me thinking, hang on a minute. We talk a lot about self-care for individually. Who's talking about self-care, couple self-care? So you just said it, you go for your walks, you go for your coffee. Yep. Couple self-care, yeah, fascinating. You literally hear, oh, it's your self-care. Oh, it's doing this, doing that. But what do you actually do together? Mm-hmm. It's a really good point. Yeah. Couple self-care. Yeah, that could be another podcast actually. That.
Nice. I was actually divorced before I met my current husband. And I was with my first husband for 8 years. And I just, I thought to myself, you know, we have business meetings. We're always in meetings. Why don't we set aside meetings with our partner and, you know, make that time? And that's something that, obviously, it's very difficult when you've got small children. But even if it's, you know, cuddling up together on the couch on a Friday night with a movie and some takeaway, just trying to guard that couple time as strenuously and zealously as you can, to cherish the relationship, and nurture the relationship. It's not going to thrive or flourish on its own.
It's true. Well, look, I could talk to you for hours. I really honestly could. I could talk for hours to you. It's been absolutely fascinating today. I've absolutely loved it.
Thank you.
And I think we've hit on so many different points. I've got podcast ideas coming out of my mind. I'm like, what all of this?
Oh, lovely. I'd love to join you again.
Yeah, I'd definitely come back on, 100%. Yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
Thank you
so much for coming on today. I'm really, really grateful. And I hope the listeners take something from the podcast. I've taken loads of information. So thank you very much, Sarah, for coming on.
Thank you.
Have you got any other plans for the future? Anything else you want to announce, or are you?
Not really. I'll give you my Instagram handle. So it's _parentingtips_. And you know, I write on a heap of stuff, and you and I like each other's. You know, we like and comment on each other's material. So. I've always got, I mean, the latest thing that I've just written about is lawnmower parenting. So most people have heard about helicopter parenting, which is this like always running surveillance, checking, overseeing. But lawnmower parenting is parenting that's taken to another level, where you basically mow obstacles out of the path for your children.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, that I think is one of my most recent posts, and it is actually becoming more prevalent where parents are, they're wanting to protect and cocoon their children and mow problems out of the way for them so that the children don't have to handle failure, disappointment,
discomfort,
anything like that. But obviously it doesn't build resilience. The children end up full of doubt. So, you know, there's always things like that that I'm writing about and that I'm researching. And
wonderful. Yeah. I love that. I'm going to have a look at that. I'll have a look at that later. Is it on your Instagram page now?
It is on my Instagram page, and I've written about it. Brilliant. And then I add some links in there if any of your audience wants to read a bit further.
Right. Thank you again, Sarah. I really appreciate you coming on today. And listen out for further podcasts, guys. And if you need any help, my website is www.martinlockcoaching.com. There's lots of free tips on there for step parents and a link to all my podcasts as well. Have a good day. Have a good weekend. Thanks for listening, guys.